Hey there, Skips and Skipperettes from across the Fruited Plains. Welcome back to Tales from the Jungle Cruise. Now, this episode is a first for us. Besides being our 30th episode, it's also the first time that we've been able to feature skippers from Walt Disney World. Skipper Alan Shankel and Skipper Johnny V worked in the mid-aughts in Orlando, and thanks to the magic of Skype, we're able to bring you our first remote interview. Now, we're still working the bugs out, so Alan's voice is a little soft and he cuts out a little bit, but we think you'll get the drift of where he's going most of the time. So if you're a Jungle Cruise skipper from any park, or you know someone who might have good jungle stories to tell, shoot us a message by email at junglecruise@gmail.com. Other than that, our regular plugs are all at the end of the episode. If you get a chance, we do have a PayPal donation page up at junglecruise.podbean.com. So if you enjoy the Jungle Cruise podcast and you want to put a buck or two toward our high monthly bandwidth charges, we'd appreciate it. Upcoming, we've got even more episodes on tap, so we'll be churning out the jungle goodness like the methane monster churns out methane at the base of the jungle. Maybe that's a different story for another episode. But for now, welcome Skipper Alan Shankel and Skipper Johnny V to the Tales from the Jungle Cruise.
Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games. We got everything you want, honey. We know all the names. We are the people that can find whatever you need. If you got the money, honey, now we got your disease in the jungle. Welcome, welcome to the jungle, yeah. Watch it bring you to your knees. I wanna watch you bleed. Welcome to the jungle.
No, welcome to the Skype edition of Tales from the Jungle Cruise. This is season 2, episode 13 or so. Usually those get changed around in post-production. We got an exciting show tonight only because we've never done a recording via Skype before. And I've got Skipper Alan and Skipper is Johnny or John. What do you prefer?
Johnny V.
Johnny V, Skipper Johnny V. Now, a little different break for us. Both you guys were Orlando. What were the times that you were working down there?
Go on.
Okay, well, we both started in 2003. I think, Alan, you worked like a week before me, right?
Yeah, I was there a week before you, but I was training after you because the training schedule was all screwed up, so I spent my first week at Jungle just being a greeter.
Well, that's funny because I know, I started off in the college program at Disneyland, and I worked there selling churros, and then the next summer I did Haunted Mansion in California, and then they wouldn't let me transfer over to Jungle Cruise. And I'm like, this is my lifelong dream. So I decided to come over to Florida. So that's why I started, because they're the only ones that let me be a skipper.
I know it was I've been through the process. I was with California Adventure when it opened, and then I came over to Disneyland, and Jungle was just the only thing for me. That was the whole reason I came back to it. So
Where did you work in California Adventure in 2001?
We opened up Malibuumer and Orange Stinger.
Oh, okay. I worked at the popcorn cart right next to those two attractions.
as we say in the Disney game, small world.
Right.
I was about 9 months or so at California Adventure, and then moved over in 2003, came back to the park and moved over to Disneyland. So about the same time you guys were training in Orlando, I was training in Anaheim. So, Johnny, what was the college program like? We actually have only had one other person on from their college program experience. What coming in at that age and that kind of a temporary mentality? How did that feel to you coming through in that program?
It was exciting. I entered a boy and I left a man. At Vista Way, that's for sure.
I hate it when I leave men laying around.
We just found them there, and that was the end of that. But yeah. It's funny. I did the college program, and I started off doing as quick service at studios, and I was selling turkey legs. So I did a whole run there selling turkey legs and ice cream, and I won a Jungle Cruise. So I applied again for a second college program, and the first interview is all like, you're here to make magic and you're going to make your dreams come true. And, you know, pixie dust and everything they want to lure you into selling turkey legs. Followed immediately the second interview when you go in and they're like, oh, you've done the program before. All right, where do you want to go? I want to go to Jungle Cruise. All right, cool. Next.
Yeah, that was my experience, too, when I applied for Disney World. Like, oh, yeah, you already did this at Disneyland, so where do you want to work? But, like, as to your point, though, as part of the temporary nature of it, I think that's actually a positive. I was told once that Walt Disney didn't want anybody to live at Disney World when he was setting up Epcot because of the, you know, he wanted everything to be temporary and new, and he wanted to spread it out throughout the world or whatever. And that's kind of the, for me anyway, that was the kind of the gist I got, that you don't get those bitter old timers there. You can definitely tell who's fresh off the boat, as it were, you know, who is brand new skippers and they're ready to make jokes and make magic. And then you have the other people who are just like, oh God, get me out of here. You know, 8 more hours until my shift's done.
Yeah. But so do you think you have a problem with, you know, sense of ownership? Cause it's one of the things that I think has, helped anchor a lot of the Disneyland experience is that there are people who've been there for so long and that they really do have a sense of ownership about the attraction, the store, wherever it is that they work. And that helps cement. I mean, obviously, you're always going to have transition and people moving through. But I think that sense of ownership is really important for the cast.
Well, I think that especially for Disney World, there's a it ramps up really quickly. You know, for Alan and I, who we wanted to be skippers so badly, and we worked, you know, we're selling churros and popcorn and ice cream, and we waited that 2 years. That when we finally got there, then it was a huge deal for us to be a skipper at that point. And so we would want to go in and learn everything that we could and try to ingratiate ourselves with the old timers and learn all their stories and stuff. It happens really quickly there.
Okay. And the sense of ownership with the old timers that are there, because they have that sense of ownership, they let you know very, very quickly where it's like, all right, you're going to fit in here just fine. Or really, you probably shouldn't be talking to me right now. You're going to get fired for partying in your apartment complex.
And obviously, because I don't have the mechanism about, you know, the casting or knowing, you know, how some of the castings work on that side. Training process and coming through, how long does it take to train at the Jungle Cruise in Orlando?
4 days. Was it 4 days with us?
Oh, yeah, it was 4 days and then a final checkout day on that fifth day.
Okay, so about the same time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Al and I were both trainers at one point there too. So
because you'd ridden obviously on the Jungle Cruise, you know, in Anaheim, and you know you'd had been over here before you came in and did the training. What was the main thing that you saw that was the difference on the outside as far as the attraction?
Well, for me, growing up in California, the temple, going through the big tunnel at the end, yeah, that blew my mind. I was like, oh my God, we're gonna go through a building. This is amazing. And then you don't end up – you can't do any jokes there because none of them work. So you're just like, oh, okay, well, that was kind of a waste of time, but it looks neat.
Well, now the temple – now we've – you know, I've heard different things over the years from different skippers. Was there a no spieling policy, or was it just better just to leave it as an ooh and ah part of the attraction? Was there a specifically stated policy that you're not supposed to spiel while you're in the temple?
When I trained, that's what I told everybody, right, Alan?
Yeah, technically, you're not supposed to spiel in the temple. And, you know, just like anything at the Jungle Cruise, technically is the
key. Yes.
However, what I usually found with it, and I think Johnny, you agree with me, is it really depended on the boat that you were in. And not even the crew, but depending on the audio level of the boat, if it was a really loud boat, it would echo really badly and you couldn't hear what you were saying anyway. And it just kind of came up as...
Right.
Kind of like you're doing with a Skype right now.
Exactly.
Well, and you know, we saw the audio quality as boats came in and out of rehab, you know, it would change. One of the things underneath in the front part of the boat, underneath where the steering wheel, air quotes, that underneath area was where the PA was set. And more often than not, that PA was inches away from bilge water. You know, one of, they eventually started moving them up and bracketing them, but it was exposed to a lot of moisture. So the PAs and the mic systems were always really hit and miss. And you could have a boat that you know, had phenomenal, you know, sound quality and clarity. And then you had other boats that, you know, you might as well just be yelling straight through a megaphone at your guests.
Oh, right. The Zambezi Zelda was like that. That actually shredded my wife's voice. She was a skipper, too. And she's also a phenomenal singer. But when she went to the Jungle Cruise, she would have to scream on a lot of those boats, and it tore her voice up. She actually – that's why we ended up leaving, was because it was either her screaming on these boats had terrible audio, or move back to Wisconsin and be a singer again. And even then, it took her 2 years to build back up her singing voice. So I felt really bad, but, you know, I mean, there wasn't anything that anybody was going to be able to do. We complained to management all the time, and they're like, okay, yeah, that's cute. Keep going, CP, you know, so
yeah. – Yeah, especially when we switched to the guns that had the sound effect, you know, that's blowing out the front speakers, you know, every trip.
Got it. So the actual sound effect was going through the actual PA speakers?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Yeah, I actually had we were talking last night with another skipper about the air horn generation. We, of course, you know, the Jungle Cruise in Anaheim went without guns for a while. Where they famously removed them, and we had, for emergencies out on the water, we had air horns rather than actual guns on the boats for signaling the issues. Was it all just radio on your guys' side if you had issues in the boats, or was there were there any other ways of
Hey, pass it down, we're broken.
Yeah, we had radios, but no one was ever listening on the other side, and half the cast didn't know how to use them, even if they did, you know, work. So
when we got the gun sound effects, we found out pretty quickly what type of audio card that they were using to make the gun sound effects. So it was Babs who changed it, Tony, right?
That's right. One of our
one
of our coworkers was friends with the maintenance guys, and they got old cards, so instead of a gunshot, our friend would shoot the gun, and all of a sudden it'd be a whale of a tale, I tell ya, lad, and things like that from attractions that didn't need their sound cards anymore.
Yep. And or we had the laser beam sound effect at the hippo pool, or he had Small World too, didn't he?
Right, yeah. And that was cool in the temple, because then it gave it some atmosphere.
Yeah. I think that kind of sounds a lot like the microphones that we use were a standard kind of CB plug. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that you could get for it was a splitter, where you'd have the microphone and then you could plug in a eighth inch stereo cable. And there were actually once or twice, very famously, on people's last days, they would plug one of these things in. And there was a skipper who came around, waited for the dock to clear, and ran through the dock, you know, ran without loading or unloading guests, with Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses cranked on his boat to the maximum volume just to do the pass through with that. I had a feeling that the smart assery and the pranksmanship was kind of a universal Orlando to Anaheim kind of a thing.
Oh, that thing. Yeah. It lifted right over. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll have to make sure after we're done recording, I'll send over. I came down in 2005. And I've got a ton of pictures, and a lot of them are of cast and of the boat. So we'll see if we made any mutual friends on my holiday down there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You were still there in 2005, right, Johnny?
No, I left. I was there in 2005. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. End of 2005, I left. So, yeah, we probably, you know, there's probably me or him walking around.
Yeah.
At that point, we were relief coordinators, though, so we probably weren't in the jungle a whole bunch.
Yeah, we'd be wearing the candy stripe outfits. So.
Mm-hmm.
I got lucky, and I guess we'll talk about the lead structure too. That's a kind of a fun topic to go into. I got lucky that they hadn't put in, I guess it wasn't tyrannical overlord rule at that point, and there was a changeover with staff, and a dozen or so of the skippers in the morning crew jumped in, and they let me spiel through the Orlando jungle. So that was a lot of fun.
I was going to say, yeah, you're really lucky, because I know most of the time the Disney World cast members don't really care about Disneyland all. They're just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's cute. But when Alan and I, we took some friends who were skippers, and we went to Disneyland, and we're like, oh, yeah, we're from Orlando. They're like, oh, yeah, come on into Walt's apartment. You eaten at Club 33 yet?
You're going to now.
Right, exactly. They're come on up.
Yeah, no, we would have Orlando skips through all the time, and we tried to show them as much courtesy as possible. So, So I guess one of the biggest differences, you know, on the rides is, and I think this is one of the charges I've heard leveled over the years, is that the Orlando ride has more of a comedic tone to the ride because of the Mark Davis inspired, you know, sculptures on the faces, and that it's more cartoony. Did you guys feel that? Did you see that the ride had a little bit more of a base comedic element to it?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, just in comparison alone, when you look at the Hippo Pool in Anaheim versus ours, the Anaheim Hippo Pool, Hippo's got tusks coming out of it, and they just look mean and nasty. And ours, you know, when they work, they're blowing bubbles and wiggling their ears, and they've got cute little baby faces.
Well, that's what a lifetime on the Anaheim streets will do to you, is they'll make you hardened. And yeah, the number of hippo knifings that happen in Anaheim is actually a really high number. There's a lot of issues with that. Hippo crime rate has just risen. So, yeah, I can see that's an issue.
I thought it was eating at Del Taco, but, yeah, that would do it.
There is. That's why they blow bubbles, is all the Del Taco. So, but, yeah, I mean, it was one of the things that struck me when I went through. There were a couple, I think most notably the Chief Nabubu. I don't know the exact on the pronunciation, but the gentleman with the umbrella and the top hat at the end of the ride, and then the native uprising with the rhino. Those two scenes in particular really seem to be much more kind of comedic effect and kind of pulling down, you know, like we do all the cannibalism jokes and things like that in Anaheim.
Yeah, and the Disneyland one is way more racist too, so well, at least we got white guys on our poll.
Yeah, Chief Nami, which is funny because he originally, when we opened in 71, he was originally Trader Sam, just like you guys. Early 90s, they changed his name to Chief Nami, N-A-M-E, like name. So legend has it, there's, you know, six or seven different stories on what happened. But eventually, the general gist of it, there was, the skippers held a contest to rename him, and somebody came up with the name. It's because the form said Chief Name. And you're supposed to put in, you know, what you thought your name would be. So it turned to be Chief Nami, N-A-M-E.
I think that sounds like someone who doesn't have a sense of humor not getting the joke.
Right.
So, which by the way, our management also was very good at that. So, you know, we definitely had a couple runs. We had a couple ex-skippers that had gone through our management team over the years. But I would say that there is something about that next tier of Disney management that strips away the sense of humor that we have at the Jungle Cruise.
Well, yeah, we were lucky because we actually had one manager who was a skipper, and that was it. And he was awesome. And I know one day we were there was a hurricane that went through. And then there was a refurbishment right back to back. So that pushed back all the training days. So there was a training day with like 13 or 14 brand new skippers. So the manager had to be in the boat the whole time. And he was an ex-skipper. And he's just like, geez, get me out of here. I got to do my own. I got to do a spiel. Everyone just get off the freaking boat. And then everyone heard that this manager was going to do a spiel. And I swear to God, it was like, Neo's fighting Morpheus. And everyone's running down the hill. Everyone's running in from the riverboat and Haunted Mansion. They're like, we got to see Jeff's spiel. This is going to be amazing. And he was just okay because he hadn't done it in a decade. But just the fact that, you know, a former skipper was like, I'm taking a boat. Forget all this. It was really kind of a neat day.
The A-lead at Jungle, who has been there, God, Jerry's been there since mid 90s, I want to say, but you know, he was there all through my time as the A lead of the attraction. I don't think anyone has ever ridden his boat. He actually has this aura of mystery. I think maybe I might have snuck on once when he was doing a spiel, but he would never let any skips ride his boat. He just kind of had this, you know, mysterious thing. So if Jerry was going out in the jungle, you knew it was a special day. So. Sometimes it'd be a celebrity thing, because I think that he was the only person who could be trusted out there. Sometimes with celebrity guests.
So either he was really funny or just awful and didn't want anybody to know about it.
Yeah.
Well, I just think he was. Yeah, he probably, just knowing Jerry, was very funny, but I think he was dead on to the OG. That's just the kind of guy he is. Yeah, he's at some point, if he ever leaves the company, I'm dying to have him on, because, you know, for 15 some years or longer than that, he's kind of been the core of what the attraction's been in Anaheim. And, I think he has more to say about the attraction than a lot of the management right now.
I mean, and that's that. You're going to find that same in Orlando. There really are skippers there who are just really passionate about the attraction, have been for years. I mean, William Babington is a skipper who's over there, and he's also a professional model maker. So the 50th Jungle Cruise book, I thought that was released.
Yeah.
He sculpted that.
Oh, very cool. Very, very cool. They're definitely, you know, I think it's funny that for as much as there's an East Coast, West Coast rivalry, I think at the base of it, that, you know, skips on both coasts are pretty much just the same.
Except the Florida ones are funnier.
Well, you know,
I wasn't going to say it, but I was thinking it.
Well, you know, it's like I said, East Coast, West Coast. It depends on what style of rap you like best.
Right.
You know, but we'll definitely pop a cap in your ass if you start talking bad about our ride. So
if you got real guns, we'll just say bang and shoot you with the idea.
Yes.
Right.
It's a more theoretical, a more conceptual ride. I guess the other big difference between the two rides is the actual track layout. And I guess this is something we haven't talked about on the podcast before. You guys have a little bit different system for how your actual boats go through the river. In Anaheim, when guests ask us, you know, if the boats are on a track, we just let them know that, no, we're guided by the spirit of the river, which is runs along the bottom of the river and the boats are attached to it. You know, you guys have a trench, kind of a V-shaped trench that runs at the bottom that the guides for the boat go in, and that's what guides the boat. Am I getting it mostly right?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. There's these two giant metal poles on the bottom. And then there's like literally like tires on the bottom.
Sideways.
And then the sideways tires on the bottom, and they kind of float inside of the trench that goes around. If you look, it's a small world and look in the trough there, you can kind of see how it's kind of the same thing there.
Right, right. Now, did you have what kind of downtime and issues did you have? Because that seems to me to be a lot less of an issue with. You know, the boats getting jammed up, or in our case, derails, which was our big, you know, big issue we would run into. What really did you guys have to deal with as far as maintenance downtimes and things like that?
Well, nothing really. I know, like, during hurricanes or storms, you get, you know, crazy storms in Orlando. So trees and debris would fall into the trough, and that would slow it up, you know, just because there's junk that those posts have to move through.
Right.
But that was about it.
When the first hurricanes... In 2004 or 2005, we had about three hurricanes blow through in about a four-week period.
Right.
When the first one blew through, I took the test trip the next morning, and the 10-minute trip took about 38 minutes. And that was full throttle all the way. It's just because there's just so much crap in the river.
Right. Did you have 38 minutes of jokes ready just in case?
I was by myself, so I didn't even like talking to myself that long. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It. You know, in the time that I was there, and I think that when you add everything up, it was 3.5 or 4 years over like a 5-year period. You know, I actually only had one six shot, one derail, but, you know, I was around on the dock for dozens and dozens. And it was definitely an issue that if we had a piece of bamboo that would, you know, get down at the bottom and wedge in just the right way, you know, it stalls up the whole ride where you have to clear that. And it seems like the system you guys had in Orlando was a lot more. A lot less maintenance, but I also think that you guys have a lot more distance between edge to edge on the river. It didn't ever seem like the jungle is on top of you the way it does in Anaheim.
One of the things, the only time the jungle's ever really an issue is in the summertime when we just get those torrential downpours where you get 2 inches in about an hour period.
Right.
The water level actually. Because the boats were technically free-floating. They were in the trough, but they were free-floating within the trough. So if the water level raised up too much, there was actually a very real possibility that if there were some low-hanging branches that maintenance just didn't take care of, it would start to take the smokestacks off the boats.
Yep. Yeah, and we had the same issue with water level, but also with the bamboo coming across. Because and once again, the small difference is, you know, all of the plant life in our jungle is all growing, living plant life. Are you guys dealing with the same issues as far as horticulture?
Yeah, it's all real plants. They do have a big horticulture team that comes out there, and they trim it back a lot. It's not like it's, some days it'll be really full and lush, and that usually happens during the summertime when you get that, 3-4 inches of rain every day. Mm-hmm. But in the winter, they'll cut it all back.
Right.
And they put the heaters in and stuff like that. The only time we really had maintenance issues is when they forget to put like plates on the bottom of the boat and the boat sinks.
That's really good maintenance.
I could imagine that would be a problem.
Yeah. That happened just one time.
The ironic part was it was the Sankaroo Sadie.
So Sank was in the title.
Just happened to be the right boat at the right time. So as you were going through and training skippers and did you definitely see, I suppose this is universal, that some people just click with it and some people didn't? It just was a very there's definitely a type of person that fits jungle.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Usually I'm going to say it, not women. Because women usually come off as like bitches or morons. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the only two default modes that those sarcastic jokes can fit into. Yep. Unless you're going to sit there and ignore the OG and just kind of talk with the guests the whole time and do your own thing.
Yeah.
You get certain skippers who get it and who usually are the ones who went to the parks all their life and they grew up and they knew exactly what they wanted to do. Skippers who want to be skippers, those are usually the ones that are the best. You don't get a lot of people who just wander in and just are like, hey, this is great. Let me just go ahead and do this. Right. You kind of have to get the feeling from way back in the day when you were little and coming to the parks. Those are the people that I found are usually the ones who are the most successful skippers.
Mm-hmm. And the CP aspect of it also was kind of very weird because it ended up bringing people to the attraction that they had no performance background. They were not comfortable on microphone. They were comfortable spieling, but this is where they signed. So there were several cases where after the 4 days of training, they had to do the ATT walk, which is you don't quite make it at Jungle Cruise and you're now spending your days at the Tiki Room in Aladdin.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys is Orlando unionized for the cast?
Yes.
Which obviously Anaheim very much that way. And if with people who were through attractions, they kept them pretty much attraction life the time that they were there. I mean, if it was attractions, you were working just attractions. You weren't getting shuffled around to a whole lot of other job duties.
Right.
Oh, no. Yeah, not at all. I mean, the other thing that we might have to do is like parade guest control and things like that. But that was about it.
I will tell you that, the one thing that I saw in Orlando for their guest control that made me so happy and was such a simple concept was that blue tape.
Yeah.
And it finally made its way out to Anaheim. How simple of a concept to stick a line of blue tape on the ground for where people are supposed to line up for the parades. I don't know why that took so long to get out to Anaheim because it's such a brilliant idea.
Well, I don't trust the Disneyland annual pass holders to stay behind that tape. I worked Fantasmic in Frontierland a lot of times. I almost quit Disneyland because I hated doing that so much. But they would just do whatever they want. Like I pay your salary. I'm an annual pass holder. So that's why I was surprised that they did decide to go ahead and opt into that blue tape method because I didn't think it was going to work over at Disneyland.
Yeah, Disney's one of the only places on the planet, really, where you can put a piece of tape down on the ground, say, don't cross here, and not only will people not cross, they'll stand there to see what's coming.
Yeah.
Which we used to do just for funsies and come back 10 minutes later and ask if they like the show.
Yeah, that's I think we all would have fit in well together. now, what other attractions were in the rotational area or the areas you could be cross-trained within? What else? I would imagine Pirates is over in that neck of the woods for you guys.
Our area was, because in Disneyland, it's Frontier Adventureland, correct?
Well, it's Adventure and Frontier is all one group. And then you've got New Orleans and Critter Country is the other side of it.
Yeah, ours was Adventureland Liberty Square. So it's Pirates, the Aladdin Tiki Tree Complex, Jungle, and then we had the Riverboat Mansion and the Hall of Presidents.
Okay. It's very cool. Yeah, and see Disneyland, it's the steam trains around the park, Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, as it's been called in different times. Jungle and Tiki were paired together. And in theory, Tarzan's Treehouse, but there was really never anything to do with that. Just walk through it once an hour. And then Big Thunder Mountain was part of the Adventure Frontier kind of area. So.
Yeah, we ended up, because we ended up as coordinators in the area, we ended up getting trained on every attraction in the area, which can be kind of weird when you start getting pulled around, where if you spend your morning at Jungle and then you get pulled to Mansion, and you're like, oh, wait, I have to be spooky now.
Right.
Yeah, but for the most part, if you were scheduled in one attraction, you just stayed there during the day. So if you're at Pirates, you're staying at Pirates. Or if you're at Jungle Cruise, you're not going to be going over to the Tiki Room or anything, because they have different costumes for that as well, just so that won't happen. You're in Jungle. You're down in that pit.
Yeah. Well, and for the most part, that's how it is, unless you have like a huge number of call-outs or whatever it is that, mm-hmm. you know, that they have to pull someone over because of a staffing issue. So what was the...
Are you okay, Alan?
So someone sounds like they're... Is everything okay over that?
Is Seattle okay?
Yeah, I'm not hearing anything of the noise.
Yeah, we've got something going on as far as background. But that's the joy of editing. That'll all get pulled out.
Yeah, not me.
Cunts.
That, however, will probably stay in. If you okay. Get, if you've heard the show, we occasionally I don't do a lot of censorship, and a lot of the skippers are foul-mouthed bastards who swear like pirates being trained by longshoremen how to be truckers.
Well, fuck them.
Yes. So I guess since we're kind of on the subject of differences, is there anything you guys want to know about the joy of the original Magic Kingdom? Is there anything you want to know about the Jungle on our side that I can answer for you? Because I'm sure that'll be vastly entertaining for my listening audience as well as hearing the Orlando things.
No.
Okay, then let's move on.
Let's talk about us some more, please.
Well, so everything I've heard about the Orlando skippers is true. You know, in the time that you were there, you guys actually had the greatest asset in Disney time, which is the Adventurers Club.
I love the Adventurers Club. Yes,
and that was pretty much where I would go, you know, whenever I went down to Orlando. That was my I would just go and drink pretty much constantly, so it was not really a vacation. It's kind of the exact same as my home life.
Wait, you could afford to drink there?
Yes.
Okay.
on Jungle salary. Well, you know, we had a lot of sidelines going. There was a lot of Jungle juice being sold, concentrated rhino horn. You know, the Asian tourists didn't really know it was from animatronic rhinos.
So.
Tifa Dong.
We actually, I know on at least one occasion there was a guest who got caught going into the Jungle, of Asian descent. And I don't know the exact reason why, but he snuck into the backside, and there was always that question mark about if he was going back to try to steal, you know, rhinoceros horn or whatever was back in that neck of the woods. I have a picture from my first last day. I luckily got to have two of them.
Alan had like five.
The final tally was four, but still.
Was it, were those days you just threw your hat on the ground and said, I'm never coming back, but I'll see you tomorrow?
One of them was my college program at Jungle ended, and I didn't think I was going to be brought back full time, but I was like 3 weeks later. So it's like, hey, just kidding, I didn't really leave. One was I ended up spending a lot of time on Liberty side over at Mansion, and once you're trained at the riverboat, you can never leave.
Yeah, that's where old cast members go to die.
And there's only like, what, 12 of us that were trained on it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so I just thought I would not be back anymore. My proficiency would go away. I moved away to Seattle with my wife, and then we got bored with Seattle, and then so we moved back, and then we got my wife got pregnant, so we moved back to Seattle, and that was my official last Jungle.
Now, do you guys have a traditional going away? Do you have any traditions as far as the last trips or last days go?
Your last boat is usually a skipper boat. You invite the people that you want to go on, and you say all the things that you wanted to say. Were they doing the shoes?
Yeah, on my last day as a CP, I threw my shoes up into the rafters. So I walked home and with my socks and stuff. But yeah, I mean, yeah, there was a ton of shoes up there in the attic.
Yeah, and that tradition, that actually was originally a 1960s jungle thing at Disneyland, where they actually were in the gorilla camp scene. Was the first time that a skipper threw his boots into the scene, and it became kind of a gratuitous tradition where skips would throw their shoes and leave them in the jungle. Really only the diehard, like people who are really into the history, knew about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was on probably half a dozen last boats where people threw their boots or shoes and left them in the gorilla camp.
Yeah, that's one of those things that Disney World tried to steal. I know because I, like I said, I grew up there. So there were certain jokes that I stole from Disneyland and that had never been told at Disney World before, which was kind of nice.
Yeah.
Like the spears going by, you make the spear noises into the microphone.
Yeah.
Like no one had ever done that before. And they're like, what the hell is that? That's hilarious. I'm like, yeah, I totally just made that up just now. But I stole it from everyone at Disneyland who always did it when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that there was definitely a flavor. It was definitely a different tone to the jokes. Even, you know, we have skippers come over all the time when we were telling cannibalism jokes at the end of the ride, who were just like, we could never tell cannibalism jokes, and we were surprised we were allowed to. But you know, we had a huge run of cannibalism jokes for a long time.
Yeah, we did that kind of stuff too.
Yeah.
We also, because Chief Nami / he's actually back to being called Trader Sam now, but Nami / Sam, he had this big kind of torn up umbrella. There was a lot of Mary Poppins jokes we would tell too. You would just kind of pull up and be like, and over here is Mary Poppins. What happened? Some comment about like a spoonful of sugar's not good for everybody. And
sure. Now I touched on it a little bit. You know, the management structure was, from what I was able to understand talking to the skippers there, there wasn't like a direct group of cast member managers at the attraction. So was there not a lead structure? How was the cast management structured versus the top level management?
Well, if you said you were there in 2005, so
yeah.
They had coordinators in the area at that point, which was kind of the same thing as your leads. But
not as much power. Leads have much more power at Disneyland.
Exactly. And the coordinators, they wouldn't just do Jungle Cruise. They would be like the Adventureland coordinator. So they would be – they spend most of their time at Jungle just because it needed the most babysitting. But they would have to go between Pirates and Tiki until they started. Pirates and Tiki had their own coordinators eventually. But then after that before that, it was just kind of the senior skipper who was there was the coordinator, and he was basically just giving bathroom breaks. And after 4 o'clock, when the full timers went home, it was just whichever CP they felt was the least stupid kind of watched the dot box.
Yeah, that was always our lead interviews was really just an intelligence test, and the person who scored the lowest would usually get the job.
Right. You don't belong on a boat. Here, hold this clipboard.
Look pretty.
Now, how do you feel that influenced, you know, the attraction? Do you feel like, once again, it's that sense of ownership thing, and also, you know, not really having that strong authoritarian side from the cast side of it versus upper level management? Do you think there was something lacking by not having that strong figure on the docks as a lead or a manager?
I think so. I know when they switched over from having the senior skipper be the coordinator and giving the boat breaks and all that stuff, when they switched that to a general, just a coordinator where they would hire him from out of areas, someone from Epcot working at Test Track coming into Jungle Cruise, it's apples and oranges. And those people didn't know how the jungle worked or how to best, you know, staff it or how to run it the best. So, I mean, when they switched over to those coordinators, that was really, I don't know, that kind of messed everything up, I think. I think that having a person who worked on the ride, hopped off the boat, and made sure that everyone got their breaks, they get it. They understand how it's supposed to be, as opposed to, you know, someone coming over from Great Movie Ride saying, well, the computer used to tell me this, but now I have a clipboard with all these magnets on it, and it's just, I don't get this. This doesn't make sense.
That's the skipper's running around. You're absolutely right. The leads at the time, the coordinators, they understood if somebody missed their bump and you had to go around 4 or 5 times, it's perfectly okay to do Jungle Justice. You know, let them learn their lesson, and they would go along with it. When they brought in people from other lands, it was just, you can't do that to people. They'll call the union. They'll grieve it.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, do you get a feeling that there was an intentional disempowering of the ride staffs because of that, and that was an intentional move by management? Because for me, that, you know, I look at that and I go, well, if you're looking to, you know, kind of keep a thumb on the morale of the ride and make sure people are doing what you want to do, you know, then taking away that layer of buffering on the lead team seems like a great way to do that.
Yeah, I don't think they're that smart. I don't think they thought it through. I think it was just a money issue.
Yeah.
I don't think that they were like, oh, if we do this, it's a very like super villainy kind of thing where it's like, oh, we're gonna take this and destroy the morale. I don't think management's that smart.
And morale wasn't the right term I was looking for, but
no, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But actually, you know, we actually saw that in Anaheim on a pretty strong basis where, I mean, for a number of reasons, you know, some of the older people who've been there for a while and who had long-term benefits and things like that, they were finding reasons to let them go or whatever it is to really pull the budget issues. Cause you had some guys who were there long enough, they were making double what a kid was who was coming on as a casual regular. So obviously that person was getting 40 hours plus sometimes overtime. You know, there was definitely times where we felt like they were moving people with seniority out of the resort as quickly as they could. So I
think that's everywhere, though. My mother-in-law is going through that at the mall right now. You know, yeah. She's working at a department store, and they're doing that to her, too. She's been there for 30 years. I think that's just business, you know. Right. I don't think that's a intentional part for them to say, well, we're going to make Jungle in our image and make sure it's always OG and make sure they're little skipper robots. I don't think that's the case.
Well, I actually don't think – I'm not saying just Jungle, but I think that there was there's a point where they wanted the rides to be about the rides and not about the people. And one of the ways you do that is by, you know, rotating people out a lot or, you know, taking away some of the manager or trainer levels. You know, I think that there's – and maybe that's too deep of a conspiracy theory, but I'm just curious as to how that played out in Orlando.
You know, well, yeah, that would happen a lot, too, where, you know, you would just get like every 2 or 3 years, you get a whole new group of managers, and those managers are like, well, I'm going to make it the way it's supposed to be. Damn it. I'm not going to, you know, let them be, you know, the stars of the show. And they would even get that at the Haunted Mansion, too. They brought the Imagineering in to rewrite the script so no one could say dead bodies or anything anymore. So, I mean, that just happens. It's just a phase that goes through sometimes.
Yeah. Were you guys at Mansion when the Eddie Murphy movie came out?
Yes.
And what was your take on, because it was based far more heavily on the Walt Disney World Mansion than the Magic Kingdom one.
I think the first 5 minutes of the movie was really pretty to look at, but then people started talking and they got mad real fast. But there was a really kind of a scary time at the mansion because there was a lot of talk going on with us that if the movie did well, that we would no longer be maids or butlers, but we would be realty agents for Evers Realty, and Madame Leota would be replaced by Jennifer Tilly and things like that.
Well, and then we'd all wear like polo shirts that would be terrible.
Well, Jennifer Tilly recorded for Madame Leota for Anaheim.
For Haunted Mansion Holiday?
For Haunted Mansion, no, for just straight Haunted Mansion. I don't know if it ever made it live, but I know she recorded a full set of attraction dialogue for it. Part of me says that it was her for a while, but I may be misremembering that. But part of the reason that I bring that up is, you know, we're going through the rumor mill right now as far as the Jungle Cruise movie. And I think it'll be interesting the effect it has on the attraction, if whether it's Tom Hanks and Tim Allen or whether it's just some other people that they end up doing with it. But obviously they're going to do something to tie it into the ride if they actually release the movie.
Wasn't that supposed to come out last year?
You know, it's been in the planning stages for years and years and years. And
I know we were doing jokes on the dock back in 2003 when, you know, the Pirates movie came out, and we were like, Jungle Cruise coming in 2005. So,
yeah,
yeah, that's just one of those longstanding things that I don't personally think is ever going to happen.
Well, I mean, they've actually signed Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. So, I mean, they've got a cast for it.
Yeah, like 4 years ago.
I don't think it was that long ago. I think it was more recent. You know, the big announcement recently is the new Big Thunder TV series. So that's going to be interesting to see how they play with that. Because that's in production. So
I'm okay with that. I want to see that. I think that looks cool. I mean, it's one of those things like with like the Disney Afternoon, like they have Gadget's Go Coaster, and no one knows who the hell Gadget is anymore except for me. Gadget Hack Wrench for life. But, you know, you can't really base a lot of stuff on TV shows, unfortunately. So I think I know at Disney World they've added a lot of interactive queue elements that are supposed to tie into the TV show. But right now, if you go through, they just look like you wouldn't know if you didn't know the TV show, and it still looks nice and it works.
Sure. Sure.
Like that, it's even if they're awful, there's kind of that nice thought that you know they're not going to be permanent. Just because, look at the Tiki Room under new management. It was a 10-year not permanent, but it's back now.
Oh, is it back now to new management?
Well, new management is gone.
Okay, sorry, you scared me for a second there, because that I actually would rather have the coming apocalypse in the Book of Revelation than have new management actually coming back to anywhere in the universe.
Well, the story why it went to back to the old show was with new management, Iago caught on fire. And Iago was a pretty expensive figure, and they were looking at it like, you know, it's cheaper just to retrofit this and build a new figure.
Yeah, because Iago was one of the newer generation audio animatronics.
Right.
It was in the same level as like Hopper was at Tough to Be a Bug.
Yeah, he ended up looking like the Scream portrait when he was done. He was just all melty and sad.
Oh, I'm sure that no one did that on purpose, but whoever did, thank God.
Again, they're not that smart and they're not that stupid.
It was a great story. No, I'm hoping this a cast member was, you know, standing too close and smoking or something. There is no lack of hatred on my part for that, you know, show. I won't even dignify it and call it an attraction. It was the only thing vaguely good I can say about that was that Don Rickles, you know, was kind of funny.
Phil Hartman was the pre-show birds. Yeah, that was the only good thing about that attraction.
Once you actually stepped inside the attraction, that's when the terror started. And I will say that, you know, them going for something that's that horrifying, you know, when you can make Alien Encounter look like, you know, the Flying Nun, the ride, it was hideous. And thank God that no one, you know, has to sit through that ever again. And then they do something. Have you guys seen the Paris Tiki Room?
No.
See that? Check out on YouTube the Paris Tiki Room. They did it right, and they went with, they didn't go comic characters, but they did new songs and they changed it up a little bit. They do Fever, you know, the You Give Me Fever kind of a song in French, with kind of a, you know, voluptuous showgirl bird to kind of mix up the guys. It's a great show. I've only seen the clips online, but compared to what they were doing with new management, it's, you know, genius.
There was a time period in the Orlando parks where there was kind of a weird overlay where they were taking classic attractions or existing attractions and just fitting in characters wherever they could. That's where you got under new management. That's where you got rid of Alien Encounter, put Stitch's Great Escape in. And it was just a really sad time.
Well, but do you think that was because of the success of Haunted Mansion Holiday?
You know, Haunted Mansion Holiday is just a completely different genre of layover. It's so well done, and it's just such – it's a completely different ride experience. Putting Iago and Zazu in, it's just like, we can fit him in here, and let's put some Village People songs in and call it a day.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was you know, and I was almost excited not knowing what I was getting into, but actually sitting through that show, it was just a painful experience. What you know, as far as obviously Orlando doesn't stop with just one park, over at Animal Kingdom, they've got the truck ride, the damn if I can't remember, the Kilimanjaro Safari.
Right. Yeah. There's a big rivalry between us and them.
And that was what I was going to ask about, because that actually seems more like the Jungle Cruise mentality in Anaheim and that attraction. What was the back and forth like with you guys?
Well, there was actual fist fights when I was there between skippers that would go there and antagonize some of the cast members. Do you remember that, Alan?
I do. It was there were three or four CPs who got fired because they went over there. They drank way too much of the African Amber Brew. They went on Kilimanjaro. They were
heckling them the whole time.
I don't know, like the driver must have just had a bad day or something, but he just beat the shit out of them.
Well, like that's the thing. Like they're kind of up their own ass because they're very intellectual and like, oh, this is a reticulated giraffe and this is this and this is why this is like that. And it's very scientific and informative. And then we're just like, da 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 da, Plasticus Mechanicus. You know, look at that guy's getting a horn in his ass. You know, so it's a very different mentality. They think that they, from what I can, I mean, the CPs are, you know, the most distilled version of whatever that cast member is supposed to be.
Let's be real. I mean, you and I went over and heckled them. I mean, think of the cheetah. Like, they'd be like, now cheetahs can reach a speed of 65 miles an hour and he's asleep in the back. And we're just like, look at him go!
Look at him go, right.
Well, you know, I think it's really just because they had real animals. They got, you know, so cocky about it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, they had a chip on their shoulder. You know, This is what the Jungle Cruise – this is what Disney wanted the Jungle Cruise to be, but he couldn't afford it, so he put those plastic mechanical animals in there.
Yeah, but at least our animals showed up.
Yeah. Right?
There's nothing worse than those cold mornings when all of the animals are just hiding in their little veterinary cages.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say there was a driver one time. It was a cold morning like that, and there was nothing. And some guy in the back of New Jersey was like, are there any animals on this ride? And he goes, no, but that log kind of looks like an alligator.
Well, you know, I've always kind of thought of those guys as in the spirit. They really are the ones who have the sense of humor, the ones who can really work it. You know, they're having to drive that freaking truck and do narration. It's pretty impressive.
No, it is, but the fact – I don't like when they try to be funny. We have a ride for that. We have the Jungle Cruise, you know. You want to be informative. You're at the park where that has the really preachy water ride. You know what I mean? So just stick to your thing and we'll stick to our thing. And that was one of the things when I went on the ride and they tried to be funny. I was like, no, just let us do that, you know, or transfer. That works too.
Yeah. Now, I think obviously there's a lot more depth of attractions, but you know, obviously Orlando, they have to fill in a lot more. And sometimes the attractions aren't maybe, you know, up to the same quality. Do you guys have any favorite things that have been through that you kind of look at and chuckle out the side of your mouth and kind of wonder what the hell is actually up with Food Rocks and why is anyone in the audience not stoned?
I love Food Rocks.
Oh, that's why they tore it down, put Soarin' in. Yeah, there's a lot of space. There's a lot of walking around with not a lot to do. I love Epcot. Epcot is my second favorite theme park in the entire world. But, you know, there's a lot of, like, dead space, you know. There's a 45-minute dinosaur ride starring Ellen DeGeneres, you know what I mean? It's just like, okay.
With a cameo by Kramer.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but and it's one of those rides where, you know, it's a pretty impressive technology with the whole moving theater concept. But it kind of was like some guy was like, you know, I have this great idea. Let's stick, you know, 200 people on the back of a truck and have that be, you know, the core of the ride. What do we put with it? You know, it almost felt like that technology came before the concept of the ride.
Yeah, and definitely. And there's other attractions where you just look at it and you know that Orlando just got the short end of the stick. Like, we're missing the entire first half of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, that, you know, that was one of the biggest surprises to me was the rides that were lifted, the imports. Pirates was the one that really felt like what the hell just happened, because it is incredibly short. I mean, I think it's two-thirds of the length at most.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Small World feels very different in Orlando.
Very small, very tiny, you know, to borrow a pun. But no, the Haunted Mansion now, though, is way better at Disney World.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I worked both Haunted Mansions, and I can say for sure that Disney World's is better.
Yeah.
Well, and you still have a people mover, so you get that stick up your ass still. So
right,
you know. But I will say that our Space Mountain, significantly a better ride. Space,
oh, fantastic! Yes,
that was another one in Orlando that I looked at and just went, why don't they do something different with this space? Because that is one of the most jarring, painful roller coasters to ride in Orlando. You know, it's just not a smooth coaster.
Yeah, it's like the Matterhorn without the charm.
Well, and you know the Matterhorn before the last revision. You know, it's at least, you know, when they redid the Matterhorn over the last, you know, however long it was, 6-7 years, and they put in the new ride control system, it's at least a smooth coaster now.
I don't know. I was there in December, and it was still,
does it feel
not like super comfortable at all? Yeah. Well, because I'm 6'2",
okay.
So anything, I can't fit into that. That's just
so for Splash ridiculous. Mountain, you just lie down in the entire log. You just get the whole log to yourself.
I wish I could. Yeah, I mean, oh yeah, and the Disney World Splash Mountain is like you're riding around in a closet. It's ridiculous. What? The one at Disney World's way better there.
Anaheim Splash is still, I don't know what it is about the water flow, but it's a much faster ride.
Yeah.
Like you're just flying through the show scenes. There's parts in Orlando where you hit, you know, the laughing place, and you're like, okay, we get it.
So it feels more like you're on Maelstrom than you're on...
not Maelstrom. I love
I wasn't knocking Maelstrom. Maelstrom's if there's a ride that I'm going to go and, you know, drink around the world at Epcot and go do something, it's going to be Maelstrom over and over again.
Well, yeah, Maelstrom is home of, it's the most hodgepodge random images of any ride ever. It's like, okay, welcome to Norway. You're in a fishing village and there's some trolls and then there's a fucking polar bear and then some more trolls and then an oil rig and welcome to Norway.
Come see our show.
Come see our fish.
Yeah, I my trip down, I actually got to go on some of the pre-open time for Mission Space. Was timing about that run, and
it's a killer.
It is.
You should tell the crazy story.
People ask me what it's like, and I say, well, let's take Star Tours and make it a 4-person, you know, ride and stick it on the arms of Dumbo and spin that son of a bitch around, you know, at, you know, 30 miles or 80 miles an hour in circles. I mean, it's a crazy ride, and I really wish they would tear down Interventions and stick it in California.
I would love it. I love Mission Space. That's one of my favorite rides there.
From what I understand, I've been told this from two different sources, they don't think they can get it through the Department of Occupational and Safety and Health in California.
Oh, no. Cal OSHA wouldn't deal with that at all. Yeah, no way.
No, that ride is too badass for their blood.
Mm-hmm.
That ride first opened, Johnny and I, George was with us.
Uncle George.
George, we went to the cast preview, and, you know, we didn't know much about the ride because we hadn't been on it yet. We're waiting in line. It's all cast members in line. And we're talking to one of the cast members who's working it. And George is like, I heard Gary Sinise had something to do with this. And she's like, no, not at all. So you go into the pre-show room, and there's 7 monitors, and Gary Sinise is up there. And all you hear is George, you go, that fucking bitch.
Who probably just didn't know who Gary Sinise was.
Oh, right, exactly, right. We should have said Lieutenant Dan.
Yeah, I still get a little when I hear Patrick Warburton doing Soarin'.
Oh, it is jarring. Yeah, when he's like, "Welcome to Epcot." Yeah,
because part of the problem is I hear him as Brock Sampson on The Venture Brothers, mm-hmm. Or The Tick, or any of the other bazillion things he's done.
And they all sound exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly. So I will say, and to give it credit, you know, the one ride that Orlando has that kicks the hell out of the Anaheim version is your guys' Tower of Terror is not just a little bit better in Orlando. I won't ride the Anaheim one, but I will ride Orlando all day long.
I completely disagree with you on that. I think the fifth dimension that you're riding through where your car goes out into a little room, I think that's super cheesy.
That's the best part, man.
I think that's super cheesy.
I don't know. I
do like the random ride system where you don't know if you're dropping or going to raise up first. That's awesome.
Yeah.
But just the idea of like going through that little room is just not cool for me.
Yeah, but for me, just there's something about the mechanism of the Orlando one that the drops don't feel as much like I'm going to die. there's a minimal death risk. And I've skydived. I've done hang gliding. Something about the Disney's California Adventure Tower just absolutely scares the hell out of me.
Well, and it's got a more intimidating presence than the California Adventure one. The California Adventure one, when you see it in the sky, I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat looking. At night, when it's all lit up properly, the one at Studios looks badass.
It's much more evil. There's much more of a sense of foreboding. So, I'll just kind of open up. If you guys, if you've got some fun celebrity stories, always go over well. If you guys had any fun celebrity interactions.
We met James Brown. Do you want to hear that?
You know, how could I not want to hear that one?
Oh, man.
That's like the Dalai Lama on the Jungle Cruise. How could you not tell that story?
The Godfather of Soul went on the Pirates of the Caribbean and then decided he had to take a leak. So he went behind into the Jungle Cruise and pissed. And then he came back around. So all the managers were like, hey, everybody, James Brown's going to be coming down in a few minutes. Don't make a big deal of it, okay? Everyone just be really cool. So we're fine, whatever. All of a sudden, James Brown, the Godfather friggin' soul, comes barreling down this hill in an electric wheelchair with a big purple cape just flowing behind him, just being like, I'm Jane Brown!
Not to mention the one-piece full-body matching purple jumpsuit.
And with him was his 22-year-old wife with a giant fake boobs, and yeah, you couldn't not see him.
So now was pretty much every celebrity of note came through with plaids in Orlando as well? Did you get guest relations with that, with everyone? Tour guides?
Sometimes. James Gandolfini got on a boat one time, and he was with Pat Bangs, who was a very, very flamboyant skipper. And, nobody really noticed him, so he just kind of sat down and he went around the ride. So there was a backup, and Pat's telling jokes, and James Gandolfini goes, hey, Pat, I got a joke for you. And everybody looks up to him, and he's like, why did the monkey fall out of the tree? I don't know, sir. Why did the monkey fall out of the tree? Because he was fucking dead.
Which, by the way, that I've heard that joke told in the Jungle Cruise without the fucking part of it, but
We have the. I was coming up from the tunnels one time, and I was walking with Danger Bob, and we saw this kind of girl backstage with plaids. She was wearing like this awful outfit, like all sorts of like cheetah prints and scarves and shit. And we're walking, like, what the hell is that lady wearing? She must be rich and eccentric, because, I mean, she's with a plaid, and we're getting closer and closer. I'm like, God damn, what is she wearing? And it was Steven Tyler.
I think he could get mistaken as someone's grandmother.
A dude does look like a lady.
And yet another fantastic attraction in Orlando, that the rock and roller coaster is a good way to spend an afternoon.
Starring Steven Tyler throwing out the shocker in the pre-show.
You know, but there are some, you know, you also have the masturbation references on Small World in Orlando. You guys know that story?
With the choking the chicken?
There's seven of them. There's polishing a rocket, spanking a monkey. But there's actually seven things that were slipped in by the Imagineers that no one apparently has thought was important enough to pay the money to take out.
Well, there's no, cameras on that ride, so.
Yeah.
Anything goes.
It's like,
because if I want to get frisky and in the mood with a partner of my choice, there's nowhere in the world that I'd rather do it than at the, you know, than It's a Small World.
They would never suspect it.
It says, you know, that it says romance, you know, creepy small child romance is what it says.
You look big in comparison.
Yeah, well, there's always a benefit there.
And there's all sorts of places. I mean, Wheelhouse of the Riverboat. Haunted Mansion is 8 minutes and 32 seconds from start to finish.
There's no cameras on the attraction in Disney World.
No, in Mansion there's not? Oh.
No. Oh, no. No way.
Oh, man. They are all over Anaheim.
Yeah, I know. When I worked there, we would watch the monitors, and if someone was getting, really frisky, there'd just be a line of maids and butlers at the exit of the attraction just applauding them, you know?
You know what we did at grad night was I was over there not working, but the maids and butlers came out with a pack of cigarettes, a towel, and a box of Kleenex. And as they were coming off the ride, we're like, do you need any of these? I think, God, I don't know if I've told this story. There was a friend of mine and I were on the on Mansion, and the couple in back of us, he was kind of, you know, 6 foot six, you know, big collegey kind of, you know, still wearing a Letterman's jacket, and his girl he was with was very Amazonian and very well endowed. So literally by the time they get around to Madame Leota, he has her scoop neck pulled down so her breasts are out, and she's obviously giving him some type of gratification. And I mean, and this goes on, and we're catching glimpses of this the entire ride, and just, you know, way over the top for inappropriateness. So we're coming up on the exit, the people mover on the exit. And I turned to my friend and I was like, you know, this ride's not the same ever since they put in those security cameras everywhere, the infrared security cameras. She turned white as a ghost and turned around and decked him and laid him out on the rubber people mover and pushed past us crying. And he was out. And so his body, you know how that it's kind of ramped up there. Mm-hmm. It pushes him up, but his head just keeps on bouncing on the rubber until, you know, we laughed and, you know, left. But yeah, no, it's there's all kinds of things you can do psychologically. Now, did you guys have grad nights down there?
Yeah, yes. We were on treehouse patrol quite a bit.
Yeah,
I did catch people having sex in the treehouse.
Is that a euphemism?
No. For what? Having sex in a treehouse? Yes.
Well, I don't know. Maybe
by that I mean fucking in a treehouse.
Okay.
On Master Robinson's bed there.
And once again, if you're gonna pick that, you know, that's definitely the most romantic music is the sound of a an island pipe organ. Is always, you know, if you're gonna get hot and heavy, it's, you know.
I spent a lot of time at the Mansion during grad nights once I was full time there, and there was one in particular where there was a skipper named Robert Brockler who was very much an old school skipper. He used to be one of the coordinators before. And for grad nights, it basically was usually just him and I or somebody else kind of making sure that the grad nights didn't kill the graduates didn't kill the Mansion cast. So we got bored and we went to on the other side of the corridor of doors. There's peepholes in all the doors. So we were just kind of standing there watching people make out and things like that. And this poor girl was riding by herself, and she, as soon as she passed us, she sneezed. And just out of habit, we both just said, "Bless you," very loudly. And I've never seen somebody so scared on that stupid ride my entire life.
Jungle on grad nights was always an experience, and I always loved it. There was a lot of people who didn't like working grad nights because they're annoyed by children, and that seems strange to work at Disneyland if that's one of your personality characteristics. But I'd have a great time with it. It was pixie stick fueled rage. The leads would always bring us as much sugar as possible, which is bad enough that we're smart ass skippers as it is. But at 3:34 in the morning, when we're, you know, hopped up on caffeine and sugar and, you know, taking high school kids out into the jungle, it was pretty intense and fun.
Did you guys have the friendly frisk?
Is this a personal question? Or, I mean, we had lots of friendly frisking going on backstage, and we enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, for grad night, you
it's an ocular pat down.
We look at you and be like, you look like you're not hiding anything.
that sounds like it's Disney efficiency right there.
Right. Close enough. Come on in. No, we didn't have Jungle open during grad night at all because they deemed it wasn't very safe.
The
end.
Yeah. Now, what was, you know, and I guess I never was you guys, how was your nighttime operation? Did you have, I mean, things I don't know because I never rode the Jungle Cruise at night in Orlando. Spotlights in the boats, or how did you guys do your nighttime trips?
There's boats on. I mean, there was lights on the outside of the boats.
Okay.
There's not like a manual spotlight that you could move around. So it was the same thing, just dark.
Yeah. No, the manual spotlight was always the best part of it because you could leave your running lights off and you could really focus the attention of your guests on whatever it was you wanted them to see. So.
Yeah. Our running light in the front, it was kind of on a pivot. bit, so you could turn in a little bit. Yeah. But we played more with right above where we were stealing, there was a spotlight that you could turn on you. So you could play with that in the temple and things like that.
Cool. I'm trying to think of other fun and exciting and, you know, memorable things, but I think we've covered a lot of the basics of my first time interviewing Walt Disney World skippers. It turns out we're a lot alike.
Except the Florida skippers are funnier.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that.
We just wanted to make sure.
So, but no, and legitimately, was any questions you guys have about, you know?
No, a quick plug if I could. Alan Please. And I are actually working on a card game right now. It's called White Fight. It's a party card game. It's like Uno meets Truth or Dare with a little bit of Guess Who thrown in. And you can pre-order it at whitefightgame.com.
Cool. So I will be happy to leave that in. Don't worry. I won't charge you much for the plug. No, actually, we actually like plugging Skipper's projects. So anything else you guys want to throw a shout out to? Websites? Any other plugs?
I want a shout out to my wife, Crystal.
Hi.
She's in the living room listening to me.
I should probably do that too. How do you sound better than I?
Because I did it first. You're welcome.
Well, and now that we've proven that this technology works and that we believe that this is recorded for the last hour and 12 minutes. not that I didn't test it a few times because I've learned my lesson. Because I've learned my lesson on that regard. I actually had the better part of one episode was toasted and we had to re-record from there. So I've kind of learned my lesson over the last 2 years. So,
well, I'm free tomorrow too, just in case.
So. Yeah, no, I think we'll be okay. And,
so we get paid for this next week, right?
Yes. Yeah. Standard Disney base salary. So, yes.
Of puzzles and stickers.
Hey, you guys get to promote your own projects on here. Let's not get greedy.
Oh, well, no, that's true.
We have an audience of tens of dozens that listen to this show, so.
Whitefightgame.com.
The game of competitive first world problems.
All right, guys. Well, thanks a bunch. And just for those of you out in internet radio land, let's remind you about the other parts of the Skipcast network. Joey and Trevor talk to each other at joeyandtrevor.podbean.com. They just put up their one-year anniversary show with highlights of all of their best shows from their 65 episodes now. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/junglecruise, C-R-E-W-S, as well as on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. As always, catch us online at junglecruise, C-R-E-W-S, at Gmail if you have any questions, or if you're a skipper or you know a skipper who'd like to be interviewed for the show. Alan, Johnny, thanks a whole bunch for joining us, and Kungaloosh, everyone.
Thanks, Kyle. Kungaloosh!